Welcome to All Sides with Anna Stever. Plans are underway to transform Columbus's South Side, replacing the once booming industrial hub with entertainment venues, businesses, and thousands of new apartments. The South Side could become the epicenter of our city's population growth in the coming decades. But what does all that development mean for the South Side's current residents, many of whom fall below the poverty line? Are we demolishing Walmarts and trailer parks for high-end housing, pushing people further and further out of the city? We're exploring the past, present, and possible future of the South Side this hour. And we begin with Columbus Business First reporter Bonnie Mabers. She recently wrote about the neighborhood's metamorphosis. Bonnie, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks, Anna.
For much of the 20th century, Columbus's South Side was a manufacturing hub, home to companies like Federal Glass and Buckeye Steel Castings. The companies brought in thousands of workers, mixes of European immigrants, Appalachian migrants, and they all settled in this area south of German Village. For the first half of the 20th century, even, it was a really booming part of town, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And these were good jobs, good blue-collar jobs. People were able to buy their own house in the South Side and feed their families and live a very comfortable life.
Even, you know, in 1912, Ephraim Schottenstein opened his department store on Parsons Avenue. Donato's Pizza opened its first location just a few blocks east of Parsons. It was booming into the 50s and 60s, really.
Yeah, I think the decline was in the 80s and 90s when some of those industrial jobs started to leave, it, not unlike other parts of the Rust Belt.
Yeah. And then the highway sort of bisected it when it got put in. And today, the South Side neighborhood looks quite a bit different from its heyday. How would you describe the area now compared to, say, perhaps 70, 80, 100 years ago?
Well, I was not alive 100 years ago.
Well, yes. Since you went in your time machine and traveled back there.
Yeah. It was booming. Families were thriving. Lots of schools. From what I've been told through my reporting, now, like, schools have closed, combined. Most of the South Side's residents are renters. Most of them live below the poverty line. If you're looking around, there's a lot of vacant, blighted properties. There's a lot of places where the sidewalks just stop or there's no sidewalks. It's a rougher part of Columbus.
Yeah, I was looking up some data from the Kirwan Institute, and they say Columbus's South Side is one of the most economically and racially diverse populations in the city. So 50% of them residents are Black, 42% are white, half the population is younger than 34, and home values, this really stuck, range from 20,000 to nearly a million. That's a huge swing.
Yeah, I think we can credit part of that upper echelon of the housing with, like, the German Village and Marion Village.
As you're getting closer and closer to those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But yeah, to think that I can't imagine anywhere in Columbus you can get a home for 20 grand, but I suppose it's possible depending on condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So what have you heard from residents in your reporting? Like, how do they see the neighborhood?
I mean, I think a lot of people, and not unlike other Columbus neighborhoods, are proud of their neighborhood. They're proud to be from the South Side. If you live in the South Side, you probably call it the South End, but
I was going to say there's a debate about that.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not one of the few that can call it the South End, but I think a lot of people are proud of the neighborhood. They care what's going to happen to it, and they see development coming in, and I think are a little bit wary, but interested to see how it might be able to help the conditions in their neighborhood.
The city of Columbus a couple years ago designated portions of the South Side as community reinvestment areas. And the neighborhood's now being reimagined as part of our citywide rezoning project known as Zone In. How are things going to change?
So Zone In allows for more dense, more tall buildings. So it's yet to be seen what projects might be proposed, but we could be seeing, especially along South High Street, taller, more dense buildings, more housing units. The city often cites the stat that with the new Zone In, zoning laws, we could add up to 88,000 new housing units. So we could see a lot more people moving to the South Side, especially on those main corridors like Parsons and South High Street.
Yeah, earlier this year, the Walmart in the Great Southern Shopping Center closed. And there are rumors, I suppose, that it's going to be converted into like multi-level housing.
I have not been able to talk with the developer about that, but that I have heard that as well.
Yeah, so it's not definite, but like the Walmart is leaving that area. Mm-hmm. There is plans to reimagine that space.
Yeah, absolutely.
That has raised some concerns, though, with people who live in the area who use that Walmart for their grocery store, for their pharmacy, for all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I haven't been able to talk to the developer, and I haven't talked to residents specifically about that. But I do know that anytime there's a change, or that's, you know, the one place that was convenient for somebody to go, it's tough to adapt, especially when in the South Side, it's a food desert. It's hard to get to other grocery stores, especially if you don't have a car.
Yeah. I think that's one of the concerns anytime we see revitalization of a neighborhood in Columbus, like from the Short North to the South Side, that it'll become gentrified, and then people who've lived there for a very long time might have to move.
Yeah, it's interesting. Since Columbus Business First is a economic development focused paper, when I talk to people about the G word, gentrification, it's interesting. Some people view it as a good thing, some people view it as a bad thing. And it's interesting because some residents in the South Side that I've talked to don't view it as necessarily a bad thing. They are excited to see change. They're excited to see, you know, sidewalks put in and streets fixed and their neighbors' houses fixed up or houses that have been vacant, you know, revitalized. So I think it's interesting, but definitely needs to be a balance, most residents have said, between keeping it affordable for people who have lived there historically and so that they can continue to still live there.
As part of your reporting, you also talked with a business that's located in some of the old industrial parts of the city. So there is still new business being founded and put up in the South Side.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason actually I started looking into the South Side was the Steelton Village development at the Fort. And the Fort is a really interesting like microcosm of like makers, creators in the South Side. There's like architects who have office there. There's a coffee shop. There's going to be a brewery opening up. It's a very interesting part of what's happening in the South Side for sure.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, can you tell us what the Fort is, what it was once upon a time?
So the Fort is a collection of four industrial warehouse buildings. One of them used to be the old Seagrave like fire manufacturing warehouse, I guess. And then the couple other warehouses have had different uses throughout the years. But now it's home to mostly vacant, but partially, you know, a coffee shop, a coffee roastery, and all these makers and creators.
And that's all part of this reimagining and reinvestment into this particular area. There's a ton of development proposed. I was looking at an article where it was just like a laundry list of apartment complexes and entertainment venues and businesses. And I was like, oh, my goodness, it's going to be. So I live up in Delaware County. And if you've watched it develop over the last decade, you're like, oh, my goodness. Every time I turn around, they're building something new. I feel like that's how we're going to feel about the South Side in 10, 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some in the economic development community feel it's only a matter of time before that was going to happen, since it's only a mile from downtown. Everything happening downtown and north of downtown, it's kind of bleeding into the South Side. So, but yeah, it's going to look very different in the next 10, 20 years.
The other conversation that people are having is that it would be convenient for new employees of Honda and Intel, about 40 minutes to each manufacturing plant. So if you were looking for a place to go, that is fascinating to me to think that like we're going to see a lot of growth in that area because of development a little further outside.
Yeah, absolutely. And the South Side's a place where there's not a ton of new housing being built. So with Steelton Village in particular, they're proposing eventually having, you know, over 1,000 apartment units where there's currently no housing at all. So think about like vacant land, and then all of a sudden there's room for new Columbus residents to come and move in and work at Honda, Intel, anywhere.
Yeah, what I find really fascinating about that is it's kind of how the South Side developed the first time. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of farmland. It was a lot of space. And so companies were just decided, oh, downtown's getting too expensive. I can put my glass manufacturing plant here. I can put this here. And then people congregated around the businesses and built up neighborhoods. Sounds like that's kind of what we're doing all over again.
Yeah, it's kind of like a second renaissance of the neighborhood for sure, just minus the industrial work. Although there is the former Buckeye Steel Columbus Castings that's now Castings Commerce Park. There is some industrial revitalization happening in the neighborhood, but most of it, you know, is mixed use, residential. Steelton Village is seeking to be centered around entertainment and the arts, so a little bit different than 100 years ago.
Just a smidge.
Yeah.
There's no trolley car that goes down there anymore.
Yeah.
Although I think that would be really cool to
that
bring
would be
back,
really cool.
If anybody's listening. Nationwide Children's Hospital is also located down there, got its start down there.
Yeah.
And it seems to be a real anchor point in that community.
Yeah, absolutely. And the hospital has an affordable housing arm, Healthy Homes, that is doing a lot of work in the neighborhood and has a really vested interest in making sure people who live in the neighborhood have good health outcomes, which start with some of the things that they say are, you know, an affordable place to live, a safe place to live.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Did you grow up in the South End or the South Side? Do you have feelings about how we should expand about affordable housing, gentrification? You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email your comments to allsides@wosu.org. When you talk about it being inevitable, just given the growth that's expected in the next 10, 20, 30 years in Columbus, I wonder how are we balancing, or how do the developers you talk to balance that delicate tightrope between we need to expand, we need more space, we need more housing versus, you know, these people have been here 40, 50, 60 years.
I think there are a couple organizations on the South Side that are working to intentionally develop the neighborhood in a way that is fair to everybody who lives there. Community Development for All People is one. They're a community development organization.
We'll be hearing from them later this
perfect.
Hour.
Perfect. So Mike can tell you all about that, but they do a lot of work in the South Side. Healthy Homes, which I just mentioned, is the affordable housing arm of Nationwide Children's. And then South Side Thrive. This is an organization that helps match South Side residents with various support organizations and make sure everyone, you know, has connection to financial education or food or whatever needs they might have. There's a couple organizations that are working really hard, but you're right, it is a balancing act. It's hard to know until, you know, you look back hindsight and see, did it work?
Yeah, I definitely think there's reason to be nervous just given the increased cost of living in Columbus. I am stunned sometimes when I look at what my home is valued at now versus what we bought it for just 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of, I mean, in the story that I wrote, I pulled some Columbus Realtors data, and the in the South Side zip code, houses from 2010 to 2012 increased by 181% in sale price. It's just crazy to see how the neighborhood's changing already without some of this big development coming in.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that is significant. And with that comes something that we've been talking about a lot in recent months is property taxes. Mm-hmm. That's the bigger concern, particularly for older adults on fixed incomes. If your home goes from being worth $100,000 to $600,000, you just have to pay more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I want to take a call from Emily, who lives in the South Side of Columbus. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to call and say that I've been here on the far South Side for 17 years. And my organization is called Here to Serve, and we support unsheltered folks that live in this community. And I just want to remind folks that we want housing here. We want housing for the people that live here as well, who are not coming in from out of state for jobs and things like that, but who have lived here their whole lives. In 2022, we led a protest of the camp Here Park being evicted because they had nowhere to go. They had no housing. And the city spent over $42,000 to get those people out of the park where nobody got into housing. And when we talk about revitalizing the area, well, why was it not nice to begin with, right? It's because this area has been purposely underinvested for years.
Yeah, I think that's one of the difficult parts of this, right? Like the idea that this part of Columbus was not invested in, say, the way that more historic neighborhoods like German Village have.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is not a story unique to the South. I mean, the South Side has some unique challenges, but there has been redlining in Columbus and the South Side and the far South Side were, you know, recipients of that.
Yeah, that was Columbus Business First reporter Bonnie Mibers.
Mibers.
Coming up, community development and affordable housing on the city's South Side. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
What happens in Washington? The NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Columbus is growing faster than any Midwestern metropolitan area. And all that growth means higher home prices, new subdivisions, and renovation of existing neighborhoods. That last part, renovation of existing neighborhoods, is what's happening to the city's South Side. They're the next neighborhood poised to experience extreme growth. But how do we do that without displacing all the people who live there now? One of the folks concerned about this is Executive Director of Community Development for All People, Mike Primo. And he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Aaron Hopkins, minister and founder of Southside Family Farms, which is working to provide better food access. Aaron, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning.
Aaron, you grew up in this neighborhood. I guess we could say the South End for you.
Yes.
Tell us about what that was like when you were growing up.
And so I grew up just north of Livingston Avenue. Still considered the South Side, but have lived most of my adult and young adult life at my current residence for the last 35 years. And in raising my family, it has been a good journey, a successful journey that has kept me solidly, you know, planted South Side. And it's an area where I still fellowship and enjoy doing work in that community.
How would you say the neighborhoods changed from the time you were a kid?
Oh, gosh. And even, you know, at the beginning of my journey, the community where I now stay was considered to me, you know, because I was north of the freeway, this was the greener grass. And, you know, once I moved into the community, I started the community starting to change. The demographics start to change. But it has changed for some positives. But then there's also some negative things that have come, you know, with change. And so those are the unfortunate things that we're seeing now that's happening in our community.
Would you classify the area as a food desert?
That's good. It is more, to my understanding now, it is more food apartheid and not so much as a food desert. A desert is a naturally occurring phenomenon. And what we understand that is happening in our community is not natural, but unfortunately, it's by design.
So how is Southside Family Farms working on that?
And so we operate through a nonprofit, I Can Do Community Development, of which I am the founder and executive director. And so we grow fresh fruit and vegetables in our community, as well as education for young people about growing their own food. And just working for better fresh fruit and vegetable access and removing barriers, the challenges, you know, to our aging. You know, we have an aging community there that have barriers. and young people that are not aware of agriculture and where their food comes from.
Mike, I want to bring you in now because the concern throughout the city is really about housing lately, housing stock, housing affordability. How is community development for all people addressing that?
So we have been, since 2005, we have been involved in the development of affordable housing on the South Side, and now through our partnership with Nationwide Children's Healthy Homes, working in the Linden neighborhood as well. We started off with one house that was donated to us that we fixed up, but over the years we became a community housing developer, and we and our partners have built about $150 million in affordable housing on the South Side. In addition to providing programming for folks experiencing poverty and homelessness to help not only address their basic concerns, but also give them the skills and help them overcome systemic barriers to success.
We got an email from May. She says the South End started to decline after the trash burning plant shut down in the mid-90s, and that the negative effects of that are still felt. Would you agree with that?
I think it's, you know, more so even with the closing of Techniglass even a little earlier, and that of also on Parsons Avenue, Buckeye Casting, Steel Castings. But I do remember the closing of the trash burning power plant. But that is a little bit further south, you know, but it's still our South Side community.
And if you want to join the conversation about the future of Columbus's South Side, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email, like May did, allsides@wosu.org. You know, Mike, it's such a delicate balance between keeping the people who call Southside home versus making room for potentially tens of thousands of new residents. Do you see any upside to the revitalization of the South Side? I mean, I know there's concerns about home affordability and gentrification and property taxes, but I mean, there's a chance here to have new restaurants, new communities, new businesses, new entrepreneurs.
We think that new investment on the South Side is here, it's coming, and it's going to be more in the future. And that is a very positive thing. What we want to make sure is that people aren't being displaced. So there's this myth out there that you can either have gentrification in a neighborhood or you can have blight. And we're trying to prove that there's a third way to do it, where you can have middle and upper income homes and you can have housing for lower income families as well. We want to make sure that our low income folks aren't being displaced. And we do that through partially because we control a lot of the rental housing on the South Side. And that helps keep the rents low for those people in those units, but also helps kind of stop the skyrocket of rental prices where you would see it going much higher in other parts of the city.
So essentially, they're not mutually exclusive.
They are not mutually exclusive. And one of the beautiful things about the South Side is we have this incredible diversity of people from different backgrounds and experiences, gay, straight, black, white, Latino, Asian. But we also have middle and upper income folks, along with folks who are lower income and folks experiencing homelessness. And it's all a beautiful coming together of people from vastly different experiences and working with each other to lift the community up.
Aaron, that sounds like a lot like the South Side of the past, where there were Hungarian immigrants, Appalachian migrants, all these different communities, different races coming together in the building of the industry there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that although those communities have somewhat become fractured, I believe that they are still South Side, and there are still a lot of those families that, although they may have gotten placed, they may have gotten pushed into another community, but I believe that for the majority, they are still there, and we just need to do better to be able to connect them to help them operate in a sustainable way.
How do you think the building of the highway changed the South Side neighborhood?
Well, and so I lived right there at the highway and watched out my bedroom window as they dug
that. Oh my goodness.
Back in the early 70s, and you know, I wasn't really up on community development at the age of 6 and 7. But I understand it now that, you know, it kind of separated communities and fractured communities as well. You know, there's a community on the South Side that, you know, I realized that they had their own government in place and their own firefighters, and that community was, you know, it was an all-Black community, but now it has been fractured and it's been shut off.
I want to take a call from Rick in Columbus. He has a question about the COTA levy that just passed. Welcome to All Sides, Rick.
Well, I'm not sure if it's so much a question or just a comment, considering your guests are developers and all the multifamily housing that is being proposed and also being built, and then the COTA levy, you know, to get people to and from, you know, along the corridors, you know, how if that, you know, all interplays. I sent a picture to Aaron about something going up at, on 104 and 23, multifamily, and it's like, how are the people going to get to and from?
Yeah, and, Mike, so the COTA levy just passed.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get bus rapid transit. How do you think that's going to impact the South Side?
I think it's a net positive for, I think it's just a straight positive for the community. Access to reliable transportation is a challenge for people experiencing poverty and homelessness. Getting transportation to work, if you work down at Rickenbacker Airport, that can be a long bus ride if you're so rapid transit is really essential, and I'm very pleased that the city has placed such a high priority on increasing access to reliable and quick public transportation. And I think COTA has done a great job. We have the COTA Plus system on the South Side where folks can get picked up at their homes or picked up at bus stops and taken for shopping or whatever. That's also a great innovation that happened on the South Side. So we're very blessed to have that as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like a public Uber.
Yeah, exactly. And very affordable.
Yeah. Aaron, how do you think the levy is going to change things?
And I think it will. It's a good thing that it will continue to make jobs and resources more available to our communities. I remember when COTA was doing some expansion maybe about six or eight years ago, and we at Southside Thrive Collaborative, of which I held a seat at that time for the community, we were noticing that, wait a minute, some of the access to some of the jobs on the far south, that if you change these bus routes, it would affect it. And so just having a more technology savvy and more accessible bus system to be able to carry them to those jobs and then also to bring them back is a good thing, because we don't want them to be shut out by access because, you know, all of those spaces are not in the community.
Zone In is also part of this conversation. That's the citywide rezoning plan to increase density, basically put more people into less space. Mike, what do you want developers to be considering, or how should the city be thinking about Zone In, particularly as it relates to the South Side?
So first off, I think that Zone In was a great step forward. I'm really excited to see what it does to our traffic corridors like Parsons and High Street on the South Side. What I would say to developers is we want to make sure that the units that are being built, the apartments that are being built, are at least some of them are designated for affordable housing folks at or below 80% of area median income. Because if they're all market rate units, and we definitely need market rate, I'm not against market rate development, but if it's all market rate, that is going to continue to displace people and make it harder for people to stay in the neighborhoods where they've lived for many years, if not their whole lives.
Same question. Aaron, what do you want folks to keep in mind as we begin to rezone this part of the city?
I guess, you know, in the word, when we say of affordable, you know, who is it affordable to? And I think that we need to consider the residents that are being affected by that, the new housing that's coming in and the zoning changes, you know, what is being offered and what is that price point? And then even for those the new investments that you were speaking of earlier, you know, are they paying a living wage, and is that something that is going to be affordable for the residents that are going to be affected by, you know, those zoning laws and the new housing?
And if I could just add real quick, there are so many folks in our community who are working full time, mm-hmm. and they still can't afford the rents that are happening on the south side, and or they could afford it, but then their landlord comes in and jacks up their rent 30% and they can't afford it any longer. So this impacts people who are working full time.
Yeah. When you look at those little city calculators, like can you live on minimum wage in any particular city? I believe for Columbus, and that this encompasses the whole city, so it's not quite correct, but like the whole city, I believe if you are full-time minimum wage, rent would take up about 56% of your take-home pay, which is just a ton of money.
Yeah, and it should be a third. Like that's the, if it's anything more than a third, you're going to be really struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah. I wonder, for those of us who maybe don't take trips down to the South Side very often, are there restaurants, are there shops, are there businesses that we should really be exploring? It's your chance to share what you love about that area.
There are so many great establishments and restaurants that I'm going to make somebody mad because I'm going to forget them all. But I mean, we've got Parsons North Brewing Company, we've got Lindy's, we've got Skillet, we've got Barcelona. There are just some fantastic. Village Coney is one of my favorites. That place has been there a long time. So, I mean, I really could take the rest of the hour just talking about the great places to eat and spend time on the South Side. But it is really a community that when you come down and just take a drive around, you're going to see there's incredible places to spend time with. Schiller Park is a great resource for our community, a beautiful place for people coming together from all different backgrounds and experiences to just spend time and enjoy nature. So yeah, there's a lot going on the South Side that's really great.
You got a favorite restaurant, Aaron?
Oh yeah, yeah. And so there is one that's right in my community, you know, off of Lockbourne Road. It's not necessarily on the main corridor of Parsons and west of Parsons, but yeah, Lady Nay's, man, it's got some wonderful Caribbean food that has some culturally relevant dishes that is, it's fantastic and out of sight. One thing that is missed from the community was, you know, there were local barbecue joints that H. Johnson's, which was in the community for so long and served our community with dishes that was relevant to our community. You know, that to see them absent, we're hoping that other family-owned establishments would come back into the area. Even family dining is something that is lost. We would love to see family dining come back. And it used to be packed on Sundays. You couldn't get near the place. All of the church families and families coming in to sit down and dine together.
Well, definitely let me know when the barbecue place opens back up, because I am always a sucker for good barbecue. We got an email from Tom who wants to know what the city is going to do for the homeless encampment on Wall Street next to the Salvation Army. He says there's a 90-unit development going in there. Any idea what's going to happen to those folks, Mike?
So I think the city is going to go out and do what they do, which is engage with people and connect them to resources. The challenge is that there's really no place for them to go. Any particular day, you know, folks are encouraged to call the homeless hotline to see if there's shelter beds available. But right now, the shelter has a wait list of a few hundred people at any particular time. We're coming into the colder weather, which means the emergency warming centers, one of which we're going to be operating on the south side, will come into play. But it is a real issue, is that there has been a dramatic increase in the number of people experiencing homelessness. And we are Community Development for All People is part of a shelter provider network of great organizations like the YMCA, YWCA, Mary Haven, Huck House. I'm forgetting the others. I'm sorry, guys. But we're working together to try to advocate for more sustainable funding. Shelter funding has been flat funded for about 10 years now, and that makes it difficult to not only maintain the beds we have, but to increase the beds. And so homelessness is a real issue. And when you displace those encampments, they just wind up moving a little farther down the road. So it's kind of like you're not actually helping the situation by displacing them. But if they're on private property and they're going to be building development, that creates a real challenge.
You know, I want to circle back quickly, Aaron, to small businesses. Are there any initiatives underway to maybe business incubators, ways to get entrepreneurs up and running down there?
Yes. And so someone that has a personal connection to the work that I'm doing, Bob Leakey, I believe he's the executive director now of Steelton Rising, which has the vision of developing entrepreneurs from the I hate to use the wrong word, but the under-resourced community, where those options of development and being able to incubate them into those entrepreneurial spaces is lost. And so also there is ECDI that is doing some really great work of creating, you know, space for entrepreneurs and development into spaces never realized.
Final question for both of you. So, Aaron, you are the minister and founder of Southside Family Farms. How do people get a hold of you if they'd like to help with what you do?
And so we do have a website, Southside Family Farms, and also Southside Family Farms at info@southsidefamilyfarms.com or Gmail.
And you, Mike Primo, you're the executive director of Community Development for All People. How does somebody get involved with your organization?
That's a great question. Our website is forallpeople.org, the number 4allpeople.org. We have volunteer opportunities, and you can always make a donation to support the work that we do, but also encourage to support the other great organizations on the South Side, like Southside Family Farms, Southside Thrive, Open Shelter, REEB, and Stowe Mission, that are all doing great work in concert with us.
That was Mike Primo, Executive Director of Community Development for All People. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Aaron Hopkins, Minister and Founder of Southside Family Farms.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to hear from developers and how they're looking to change the future of the city's South Side. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
What happens in Washington? The NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
We're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. The industries that build Columbus's Southside neighborhood have all but disappeared. Once an empire of steel and glass, the community now struggles with crime, education, and housing. It's a community city council is designated for reinvestment, a place where new employees for Honda and Intel might want to live. Our next guests are developing projects that could bring housing and business to the South Side. Kyle Katz is a developer and investor in Katz Development. He has projects underway on the South Side, and he joins us now. Kyle, welcome to All Sides.
Anna, thank you for having me.
And we're also being joined by Jeffrey Woda, founder of the Woda Cooper Companies, which have been involved in the development of affordable housing in the South Side. Jeffrey, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jeffrey, earlier this year, your company was involved in the opening of Lockbourne Green Apartment Complex. How is that going to benefit current and new residents of the South Side?
Well, we took a underutilized site and converted it to affordable rental housing. 60 units are located there, brand new housing that we will target households earning 30% to 80% of area median gross income. And I'm happy to report it took us less than 90 days to fully lease the community once we opened the doors. It was very well received in the community. And I think it's going to provide a great benefit to those in the workforce housing area that are looking for housing.
Sometimes affordable housing gets characterized as less desirable or poorly constructed. How do you overcome those challenges and convince the public that this is quality housing?
Well, one thing that we do is we talk a lot to the community before we ever break ground on what our vision is and get their input, those local stakeholders, to what their vision is, so we can adapt our plan to really meet the needs of the communities. And then we take them to other communities we've developed in Greater Columbus. And as we're through construction, have tours available to see what we're building, obviously, once complete, grand opening ceremony, so people can walk the halls, see the units, see that the quality of construction is nothing like they imagined. I think you can drive by Lockbourne Green and you'd be surprised that it is targeting that audience that I described. It looks every bit as nice as market rate housing. So I think, you know, over time, we can overcome those biases if they can really see what we're going to produce and give us the opportunity to produce a great product in their neighborhood.
Kyle, what attracted you and your business partner to developing projects on the South Side?
Wow. Well, it really started with Justin McAllister moving his 95-year-old manufacturing facility to the building now known as the Fort. Justin took occupancy of about 25% of the building, and then all of the built-out spaces began leased to small firms looking for an interesting home. And this is not a story that's new to this building. All mill construction buildings and neighborhoods like this attract creative class immediately. And a wonderful community has been established there. And I think Bonnie was talking about this earlier. Our objective as the developers of the community is to bottle that DNA, not necessarily allow it to dissipate over time as we develop it, but bottle it and have that DNA permeate the entire 50-acre campus, all of the 1,400 apartments we wish to develop, as well as about 400,000 square feet of commercial space.
Yeah, the Fort could, you're planning to have it have more than 1,000 residents on 26 acres. There's a New York City-based winery opening this winter?
There is. City Winery, we're very fortunate. A gentleman named Michael Dorf, who has 16 locations now, has made a career out of finding interesting new locations for his business. When he chose to come to Ohio, he decided to come to Columbus. When he decided to come to Columbus, he likes Steelton Village. In fact, he's the only person we've sold property to. So Michael has purchased 11,000 square feet and half an acre for outdoor concerts. And please look up citywinery.com to see what he's all about. It's incredible, and we're lucky to have him in Columbus and very fortunate to have him at Steelton.
Yeah, Steelton Village has a lot of history. I wonder, how are you balancing preserving some of the character and the charm of this location with redevelopment?
Well, preserving the character, charm, and authenticity is the secret sauce. And that, indeed, is the differentiator for our community. You know, you just talked to Jeff Woda about not having a second-class experience because you're moving into affordable housing. I will tell you, Justin and I, through the City of Columbus, has a pre-1994 CRA, not requiring any affordable housing to achieve that CRA. Philosophically, however, we're dedicated to providing affordable housing, and right now we're targeting about 450 units that would be at about the 60% AMI mark, and working hard with the city to make that happen.
Jeffrey, is there a market for more senior housing, especially for those who may want to age in place and not leave their neighborhoods?
Yes, you know, in the area that we work, there's just a lack of housing at all age ranges. We've developed several senior properties throughout Columbus, and we just broke ground on Juniper Crossing, which is on the corner of Obetz Road and High Street in the far south side. We will have that fully leased by the time we open the doors. And again, it's just the lack of housing at all price points, but especially in the affordable area. You know, seniors that spent much of their lives in a neighborhood don't want to leave just because now they're seniors. So it gives them options to stay in the neighborhood where they've built their lives and gives them the opportunity to have something that is really quality, but also at an affordable price point.
This next question is for both of you, and I can start with Kyle. How do you think the zone-in process and the COTA bus levy is going to change the South Side for you and your future development plans?
I think for us as developers, it's speed to digging. It just removes a lot of red tape with regard to zoning. As to taller buildings that are allowed by that, it's simply not going to happen until there's greater rent support for the new construction required and the costs of that higher development. As it relates to
bus rapid transit, the COTA levy.
We're very, very happy about that. I think that we always have viewed Steelton Village as a transit-oriented development. How that works out into the future as transportation is changing rapidly is really top of mind for us. And there's no question that the Coda Levy is going to benefit our neighborhood, whether it's on Parsons or High Street.
What about you, Jeffrey?
Yeah, so much of what Kyle stated, I'd agree wholeheartedly. The ability to get a project fully entitled and ready to start, especially when you're in uncertain economic times and interest rates are changing and investors' appetite is changing so quickly, the quicker you can get to that shovel-ready, groundbreaking closing is going to benefit developers greatly. I also agree on the high rise. You know, we have certain building codes, and if you're four stories or less, you still have a pretty good construction amount that you can build for. And once you start getting higher, the construction costs increase exponentially. And in the times we find ourselves, construction costs at all types have gone up so much in the last couple of years that we're really looking at ways to be more efficient with the dollars. Certainly for our tenant base, transportation is a big outlay of cost for them and their household budgets. So we really try to locate our communities where they have access, and improving the Coda lines and the ability for our residents to access that transportation is going to be really key to their household successes. And we really want to help them do that. So we try to locate strategically to help them, as that is one of their biggest costs that they have in their personal budgets.
Oh, we got a question from Holly, who was curious about the Great Southern Shopping Center, and the Walmart there is closing, wondering if either of you have any ideas about what's going to be done to revive that area.
Jeff, do you know what? I don't. Jeff, I hope you do.
That seems to be the question of the hour.
Yeah.
I wish I had an answer. I do not.
Yeah. How are you both making green spaces part of your development plans for the South Side? Kyle, we can start with you.
A green space is critical to Steelton Village, and we're fortunate to have 50 acres under our control. We'd imagine 10% or more of that dedicated to green space. And what's also wonderful about Steelton Village is that we will have a trailhead for the South End accessing the Rapid 5 path, which constitutes a half a mile border for us on our West End. So all the green space we have on the west side of High Street will be right on the Rapid 5 path, which is incredible also as we talk about transportation and its myriad forms. So we'll have a tremendous amount of green space that's a big part of our program.
It's important to people who enjoy running, biking, connecting in other
Absolutely.
Ways.
Absolutely. We anticipate a dog park. It's really tailored around that so that our residents have full lifestyle. And that's what we're designing for, is lifestyle incorporating not just nature, but the arts that exist on the campus and will grow.
Jeffrey, how are you trying to incorporate green space and connection to all those bike paths and stuff that are pushing further south?
Yeah, again, agree with a lot of what Kyle talked about, that we're trying to accomplish not only just green space, but providing playground equipment for our residents that's in a secure location on our sites. You mentioned biking. You know, bike racks now are just such a key part of what we build, so people have places to keep their bikes, exterior storage so they can keep their outdoor equipment, so as they enjoy nature. You know, it's just a big part of how we try to design a community. And we try to design those amenities tailored to the group of occupants that we're targeting. So, for instance, the amenities maybe for a general occupancy development might be a little bit than it is for a senior development. But again, outdoor gazebos, areas where residents can congregate and meet and enjoy nature and outside is a big part of what we try to accomplish.
And all within the parameters, in a lot of cases, of affordable housing, the kind of things you might think you don't get with affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we do have a limited budget, so we want to make sure the amenities we are spending dollars on, the residents can actually use and enjoy, and we're not just putting them there to put them on our flyer and say we provided these amenities, but amenities that people actually will use and take advantage of.
And by the way, we're fortunate with our green space to have support. It could not have happened with the ODOD grants for environmental cleanup, which have taken place. We've applied for TMUD as well, transformational mixed-use development, which would allow us also to really amplify the space we're able to give our tenants.
That was Kyle Katz of Katz Development. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Anna.
And Jeffrey Woda, founder of Woda Cooper Companies. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I want to thank you all for joining us on All Sides, right here on 89.7 NPR News.